Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And we got our guy, John Harris. We do this Wednesday every week at 3:35. Appointment listening for you all. You're about to get a whole lot smarter about football. John Harris of Texans Radio, Texans TV, and Texans.com. And John, obviously the loss sucks and it stings. But are you able to draw a lot of sources of optimism from that performance on Monday night?
Yeah, I do. Now, I try to be optimistic in everything that I do, but I also, having been a coach a long time ago, I'm never satisfied. Had they won 59-3, I would have probably found something to be a little bit upset about. But I'd like to look at the optimistic side of life, and I feel pretty good. Now, that will, seeing that field goal, and I was standing right underneath the goalpost to alert Mark whether it was good or not, watching that ball go through, it felt like somebody was punching me right square in the nether regions, because that one stung, man. It stung. But when you step back, when you get on the plane and you start thinking, okay, boy, there are 15 more games left. If we play like that against 15 other teams or 12 other teams, whatever it is, because we play teams twice, we're going to feel pretty good about what this 2019 Texans team does. But they've got to be able to do that, and they got to go back to the drawing board on a few things and clean a few things up. They got to figure out who's going to be a guy they can play at slot corner along with J.J.O. and Bradley Roby and figure that aspect out, because that was not working on Monday night, and they can figure that out, then I think they'll be in some pretty good shape. Now, they've got to get more pressure on the quarterback. They've got to create more things, but they're facing Drew Brees. It's the greatest all-time leading yardage passer in the history of this great league, so it's not going to be quite that challenge, but I think they've got to amp up the pressure even more so when they face a guy like Gardner Minshew and make sure that guy doesn't even feel like he's, you know, in the same game. He's like, oh my gosh, these guys are so good. They're not like Kansas City. They got to amp the pressure up on him and make him feel it this Sunday.
John, before we get into the X's and O's of this thing and get into that slot corner and what they're going to do, I mean, I hear Bill O'Brien talking about, you know, they just can't let this game define them. And I know that's a lot of coach speak, but to me, if you're a coach or an owner or the panel or a player for the Houston Texans right now, you watch this game film, and yeah, you understand that you let one slip away and you could have done a couple of things better to give yourself a chance. But damn, man, you got to feel pretty good about the performance on that stage versus that particular opponent, don't you? I mean, this is a game that I would almost want it to define you. You fight like that, you're going to win double-digit games and be a better football team in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. And Clint, I go back to this, and this is kind of how I define this. In 2007, I know we all remember in 2007 when Appalachian State went to Michigan, and 34-32, Appy State pulls off the big win, and for a whole week, Michigan's asked, man, what happened? What are you guys doing? You're number five team in the country. You lost to this little FCS team, you know, Boone, North Carolina. I mean, what's going on? They spent all week focusing on what they didn't do against Appalachian State, that Oregon came in with Dennis Dixon and slapped them around. And I remember thinking afterwards, boy, Appalachian State beat Michigan twice. That's what cannot happen. You cannot allow the Saints to beat you twice. And I think that's the coach is saying that in some ways, like, don't let it define you. Don't let that loss be what gets you beat, because you're hanging on that loss so much and that you're just hung up on, oh, we could have had that one, that all of a sudden the Jacksonville Jaguars sneak in here and bust you in the mouth a little bit, and before you know it, they're walking out of here with an ugly 7-6, 13-12 sort of win. Don't let that loss turn into a second loss. Don't let Appalachian State beat you twice. And look, Oregon was good in 2007, but Michigan playing at max level, they would have beaten Oregon by a couple touchdowns at home. They didn't do it that day because they were still hung up on an Appalachian State loss. As my buddy Tyler Marcotte walks by, a Michigan State fan, so he's loving what I'm talking about, but you can't let a team beat you twice. And yeah, I know the Saints are really, really good. It was not an upset loss, but you can take a lot of positives, enough positives that I think you can build off of them as opposed to going overconfident in a game against the Jaguars. I think you build off what you did Monday night. You go in and you beat a team that you should beat at home, that's banged up at quarterback, that's a rookie facing you, getting his first start. If you play the way you should, not turn the ball over, then you should have an opportunity to beat the Jags and get to 1-1 and go out to L.A. and take on the Chargers.
John Harris joining Clinton Kamla here on Houston Sports Leader Sports Radio 610. Huge news yesterday. Aaron Colvin let go. Philip Gaines signed. And now who plays slot corner? Let's dive into that rabbit hole, if as it were. Bradley Roby played a lot of slot corner with Denver. And Lonnie Johnson at 6'2", 213. I feel like he's more of an outside guy. J.J. Moore on the outside and Roby, they're in the slot predominantly. Do you agree? Take me there.
Well, I think it comes down to options, and that's option one, Rick, is to me, move Bradley inside in nickel, not full-time, in nickel. Move Bradley inside, let him play on slots on the inside, and then let Lonnie and J.J. play on the outside. To me, that's option one.
John, I don't mean to interrupt you, man. Explain to the listeners what nickel, what you mean when you say not nickel.
Well, when the Texans go to nickel, they go to five defensive backs, or dime. I should say sub-package. Sub-package is kind of the tree that covers everything, and then one branch is nickel, one branch is dime, and then there are some teams in college, like Texas played, I think they called it their cowboy package the other night against LSU. It didn't help them, but they played eight defensive backs. They call that cowboy. I heard somebody refer to seven DBs like the Chargers played against the Ravens in the playoff game. They call that dollar. But most teams are playing nickel or dime. That's your sub-package look. And so you have an inside corner, a slot corner, or a nickel corner. There are a lot of different terms for it. Some teams might call it differently depending on how they use that particular corner. The Texans play a decent amount of man coverage. And so that guy's going to have to be able to run with some quicker slots on the inside. Now, what the Texans offense does when they face a defense like that is they'll move DeAndre Hopkins inside. And if you got some slappy inside, just like a third corner, well, that guy's going to get beaten up a little bit, as we saw DeAndre do against the Saints the other day. They tried with a safety playing 10 yards off. That's not going to work. But with the Texans, I think you could do a couple of things. Bradley's the kind of guy that I think could play either. I don't know that Lonnie could play either. I do think J.J. could play either. So you move one or the other inside to play when you go to your sub-package look. Now, you're in sub-package a decent amount of time. But coach followed up and said, look, Lonnie's got to have a good week in practice to get ready if that's what they decide to do. So I do think that's option one, because those three guys have been here from day one. You'd feel like you've got continuity there. You move Bradley inside, then you got Lonnie and J.J. on the outside. Option two is you leave J.J. and Roby alone. You're not completely convinced that Lonnie's ready to go, and then you go with maybe Keon Crossan, who has been here about a week and a half. But he's at least with the Patriots, so some of the verbiage defensively he's heard before. So Keon Crossan, a guy that went into the game the other night when they had seven DBs on the field on last drive, actually did some good things in coverage in that last drive. There weren't a lot of it, but he got a few plays and looked pretty good. So that's, I think, the second option. Now, the third option is one that I hadn't thought of because he just got here yesterday, and that's Philip Gaines. I don't know how much he is going to absorb of the defense. He's been around. He's played in different schemes. But I think Philip is a guy that could play, as Bill Bryant said today, inside or outside. At Rice, he was an outside guy. He's a 4-3, 40 guy. He can run. But is he an outside guy? Is he an inside guy? How does he factor into it? Maybe he's a guy you play on the inside, leaving Roby and J.J. alone. And the last option is the rookie Xavier Crawford. But I think that's a way down the list option, if that's going to be option number four. But those are kind of the way I would break it down as far as the options that they have. I think there are better options than what they were going with, but I think I think we have those moments sometimes where you're probably never going to get 100% assurance that you're doing something right, but I think there are times that you're going to get 100% assurance that something is wrong, and I think they found out that was wrong what they were doing the other night. So they make some changes, and hopefully it'll improve. But I'll tell you this, I'm really encouraged by the way that Bradley Roby covered. J.J. was, solid. J.J. didn't give up a whole lot. I think Roby was in the hip pocket of receivers throughout the night, and I think that Drew Brees found his mark, and he went after it. And that's going to happen when you face a quarterback like Tom Brady and Drew Brees. But as we all know, to take that next level, you got to knock one of those jokers off. You got to beat a Brady. You got to beat a Russell Wilson. You got to beat a Drew Brees at some point in a big game, and your secondary is going to have to cover at a level that maybe it hasn't done thus far to be able to do that. You got to cover like the Patriots did against the Steelers receivers. Those guys were throwing blankets over those guys. And hopefully that's what this group can eventually do. But I'm curious to see how those options all come together. But I know this, Bradley Roby has made a world of difference in that secondary. And now it's just a matter of, do they want to go with Lonnie and put him on the field on the outside, or they want to put or they want to leave J.J. and Roby alone and go with another inside guy that they think might be able to match up a little bit better on the inside slot. So I think it's going to be something that we watch significantly and watch it very, very closely in this game against the Jags. I don't know if they can exploit it like Drew Brees, but I do think they'll try and attack it like Drew Brees.
We're talking to John Harris, Houston Texans TV and radio analyst, sideline reporter as well. I mean, you're a busy man, my brother. Let's talk about, I mean, nobody knows this team better than you. I mean, you're there, you're an old coach. You got it's in your veins, man, to talk X's and O's and pay attention a little bit more in detail than most folks. You watched Rack's defense against the New Orleans Saints and future Hall of Famers Drew Brees and Sean Payton. There's obviously going to be a different approach week one to week two, opponent to opponent, Saints to Jacksonville. There's obviously going to be a change on that entire defensive approach. What do you see that being, all things considered, with the Texans Sunday?
Well, I think one of them, it's funny because Bill O'Brien used this phrase one time with me, and it stuck with me, and I love it. And he calls it spin the dial. And I was like, spin the dial? And he goes, yeah, you know, spin the dial. Like, you know, you've got all your defense or your offensive plays or your defensive plays on a dial, and you just kind of spin it, and you keep spinning it. You don't get stuck on, you know, cover four, you know, four, you know, 3-4 cover four, base cover four. You don't get stuck in that. You're not playing palms or two read. You're spinning the dial a little bit more. What the Texans do a good job of is disguising coverage. They do a decent job of that, and they play a number of different coverages. What they didn't do the other night, and I don't know whether it was a result of facing Drew Brees, they were afraid that Drew would hurt them, or if they didn't trust the secondary enough, they were afraid that they were going to get in man coverage on Kamara or Thomas in a matchup that they didn't like, and the Saints were going to steal a touchdown. I don't know, but it didn't feel like they spun the dial enough on putting pressure on Drew Brees. And when this defense has really ratcheted things up, yes, Clowney and Watt and Merciless were all great at times, and they were wonderful, but they would also scheme up guys coming from different angles. The nickel was coming off the edge, or maybe in some cases splitting the B gap on a blitz. Sometimes they would use Zach and B-Mac and Dylan Cole standing up over the center, and you know, two guys would drop, and then the other guy would come, and then maybe two guys would fake like they're dropping, and then they would go. I think spinning the dial is going to end up being a big deal for them, because coverage-wise, I don't know. I mean, they've got so many different coverages back there, and you could tell that some of them in particular, every time Alvin Kamara ran a route out of the backfield, Benardrick McKinney and Zach Cunningham had eyes on him wherever he went. They were going to take away Kamara in a passing game as much as they possibly could, especially when he was in the backfield, which was going to put everybody else essentially in solo coverage across the board. And it didn't work out, obviously, because that's a team that's going to get theirs eventually. And in the second half, the dam broke. And I felt like in the second half, I thought fatigue started setting in large part because they were out there for a while. But also offensively, there were some drives in the third quarter or so that really the offense didn't do them any favors for them. They couldn't get off the field. They got off the field too fast, and I think the defense got worn down a little bit. So from that perspective, I think you've got an opportunity this week against the Jags to kind of slow things down a little bit, get a few more pressure packages in there, spin the dial a little bit more, and take this rookie and make it really, really difficult for him to figure out what you are doing on a play-in, play-out basis.
John, Rick asked me a question earlier that I thought was a pretty interesting take, is about adjustment. I think this game came down to you talk about spinning the dial. I think the reason they didn't spin the dial in the second half is because it worked in the first half. You held them to 3 points. And so
yeah.
The spinning the dial you would like to have seen, in hindsight, it's easy for us to sit here and talk about it, you would like to have seen happen in the third quarter. The halftime adjustments, I think, on both sides of the ball put the team in a tough spot, and it allowed one of the best offenses in the game to come back and take the lead eventually. What is your take on halftime adjustments? If something's working like that, how do you adjust to counter what you know the offense is going to do?
Well, what I find interesting, Clint, about that, first of all, I think you're right. I think that's one of the traps you can fall in when something is working in a half or a quarter or whatever, mainly a half. You tend to, well, it's working. Let's stick with it. But again, I go back to in that first half, Drew had opportunities. There was only one drive all night where the Saints didn't get in our territory. I think it was drive nine. I think it was one of the last drives in the fourth quarter. And what happened on the drive? They got a sack. The sack helped take them out of an opportunity to move the ball down the field. So the Saints moved the ball, but yeah, things in the first half did work, and I think you fall into that trap. What was interesting in talking to Bill at halftime, things offensively worked. And I'll never forget it. He said to me, I said, Coach, you know, you got to feel good about the first half. Things have gone well. You've established a line of scrimmage. And he looked at me and said, yeah, things are moving fine, but we've got to continue to change things up in the second half. Now, I know if he's saying that he probably said that to Rack too. And this team will make adjustments. There's no doubt. I think, you know, coming out of halftime is sometimes a hard time to make adjustments because you get 12 minutes. By the time the coaches get all together, they've only got like 6 or 7 minutes to even meet with the team, if that, because they got to meet themselves. The players got to get a break. They go to the bathroom and boom, you're back out on the field. This isn't like high school where you got 30 minutes. Man, I felt like I could watch a sitcom up in my office before I met with my team to go back out for the second half. You got 12 minutes and not even that at some cases. But where you got to be able to make the adjustments is after a 2-minute and 9-second drive to start the second half, like, okay, Drew just carved us up. What are the things that we now have to change a little bit? That, I think, is really when you've got to make those changes. When you come out of the second half, they've shown you something different. Okay, they punch back. Now we got a counterpunch. And I feel like fatigue played a role. Maybe they didn't counterpunch like they wanted to. Maybe they're limited personnel-wise in what they can do. That can't happen going forward, especially against a team like Jacksonville Jaguars playing rookie quarterback.
Hey, John, give me about a minute response on this, if you can, about Deshaun Watson. The two plays in 75 yards to take the lead deep into the game against New Orleans took me back to Marino, Clayton, Duper, ball flying through the air, NFL films documenting it all. It was like, oh, my God, I can't believe he just went 75 yards with two snaps of his fingers. What did we learn about Watson on Monday night?
I think we continue to learn that Deshaun's maybe his best asset is his toughness. We can talk about all his physical traits that we want, but I think we continue to see that his toughness is his best asset. He's absolutely phenomenal when it comes to that. I mean, he fell on his back end, and man, I know he had to be hurting, but yet he kept coming out of that tent like, man, I'm fine. And I'll tell you, I just the enduring image of him walking on the field with 50 seconds left and no timeouts, and I see him with his hands over his ears to get the play. He gets the play, and he just kind of saunters into huddle, and I was like, we got a shot, boys. I didn't think it'd be two plays, but I was like, I bet money on this joker right now. I know that for a fact. He said it. We've all said it. We feel like there's a shot every time he goes under center. But I'll give credit on that final play, guys, and the fact I did a Telstrader on this. Nick Martin, who just signed a big extension, throws maybe the best block of his career, picking up not one but two Saints. That would have been a problem for Deshaun on that play, but because he picked up those blocks on an A-gap mugger and then a looper coming back inside, and he picked up both of them, that was the reason why Deshaun Watson got that throw off to Kenny Stills. So I want to give credit where it's due, but you can check out the Telestrator where I broke that down, but it was a great job by Nick Martin. But listen, we all believe because number four is under center, and that's the most important thing.
I love it, man. Clint, we got an A-gap mugger reference from John Harris. John, you know we love you, man. We love taking these X's and O's deep dive with you, man. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you down the line, man.
Absolutely, boys. Appreciate you.
That is Coach John Harris.
That A-gap mugger is what I told you Joe Lee Dunn at Mississippi State was doing with them linebackers to me. He mugged up in the A-gap. Just means the backers walked up, and instead of being 4 yards deep, he's walked up in the A-gap where he can blow a kiss on the quarterback if he wanted to. That's what happened. That means he was standing right on top of Nick Martin. So, you know, it's crazy when a guy gets a contract extension like that. Of course, everybody, oh, well, what about the Dallas game? What about this? What about that? And, man, that coach's film don't lie, man. It's hard. It's hard to see guys on game day the same way that coaches see them on coach's film.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.